Good evening, everybody. It's November 30th, 2010, if it's tomorrow where you live. Otherwise, it's November 29th, 2010, and you're here with 10 dozen minutes of not knowing what day it is with Jick and Mr. Skullhead. What's up, Jick?
I know what day it is. I don't, however, know what state I'm in. Apparently, I still don't sound like I'm healthy.
Yeah, you sound a little jacked, but I sound a little jacked, too. I think there's just... Either there's global crud going around, or there's crud for everybody who went to Columbus, or something.
Last time, I was jacked up, and you were coked up. So between us, we and the captain made it happen.
Made it to the Hamptons?
Yes. Me and the captain went to Martha's Vineyard.
That's lovely.
Tennille was there. And Tone Loke.
Tennille, the guy who did the illustrations for the original Alice in Wonderland?
I don't know who... I don't get that joke.
James Tennille was the dude.
Oh, I see.
Who did the creepy drawings that haunt your nightmares as a kid, like with Alice with the snake neck and
those didn't haunt my nightmares at all. Those gave me fantastic, fascinating dreams. Mm. I did eat a lot of peyote as a kid. So those were among the least terrifying things I actually saw when my eyes were open.
We all have our peyote eating phase when we're like 4 or 5, you know, it's like a glue and peyote.
Yeah. Yeah, you eat some paste.
And then you eat some peyote. It seemed weird to me that we were doing arts and crafts with like popsicle sticks, glue, and peyote buttons.
Yeah, you know, you'd think you'd find something that was just as cheap and just as useful in arts and crafts for children.
They're like, no, don't eat these, but, you know, tell a bird not to fly.
this is my first day on the home territory since I went to visit you in the frigid Northlands.
That's right. How did that visit go?
My visit with you?
Yeah, I'm curious as to your take on it. Did we pass the test? Would you come back?
I think so. I had fun.
Cool.
We ate. You made some meals and they were good. Your kid is adorable, and that was about the right amount of time to spend with a kid, right? I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, think what that's like for me.
Yeah, no, I can't even.
But we didn't,
I can't bring myself to think what it must be like for you.
We painted the town. That was some good stuff. We had a good night out and a good day in playing nerdy games.
And then I painted it with mucus from then on.
Yeah.
Man. I think maybe just not traveling anymore and, you know, maybe taking it a little easier on myself. I think being sick and spending time in Austin, Texas and New Orleans, Louisiana was probably not the wisest decision.
How was New Orleans?
It was fun. You know, I like it. I tend to take it pretty easy when I'm there. Mm. I don't actually do a whole lot of hooting and hollering because it's the parts of it that you think of are kind of frat douchey.
Uh-huh. So you take...
I got made fun of by a dude. Two anecdotes involving dudes with guitars. One, I was walking down the street and somebody was like, this dude with a guitar was sitting there, said, "Can I get a Go Saints?" And I didn't say Go Saints. Ooh. And so he was disappointed. And he looked at me and he was like, "Come on, man." And I said, "Well, was that like a hockey team?"
Nice.
And he said, "Shouldn't you be working on a computer somewhere?" And I was like, and I walked off. Inside my heart, I was like, oh, fuck you, dude. That guy had brought his own bottle of Southern Comfort to a bar. Because instead of having a responsible job where he works on a computer, he can't afford to drink.
Yeah, I mean, there's no comeback because the comeback is, shouldn't you be sitting your broke ass on the sidewalk harassing random strangers for money? Oh, mm-hmm. Wait.
I don't think he was asking for money. I think he was asking for enthusiastic support of his chosen sports team.
I see.
Why do you need that, though? Why do you need that validation?
Oh, maybe somewhere subconsciously he doubts that the Saints are all that great.
Hmm.
So he demands that other people validate his decision to support the team. Well, you gotta imagine, this dude's personality is so tied up in the love of the sports team that validating the team is like validating him.
Okay, alright. Also, why do you sit at a bar with a fucking acoustic guitar in like a crowded bar when it's like game night. Like, seriously, that's the day that you decide to take your acoustic guitar out with you? He wasn't playing it. He was just sitting there drinking Southern Comfort out of a bottle.
Is it a prop, do you think? In his lap. To let the ladies know that he's a sensitive artiste?
I guess. He's like, look at me, I'm the reincarnation of, I was about to say Shirley Temple, but what I meant was Janis Joplin. And what I almost said, instead of Janis Joplin, was Janet Jackson, who you could be the reincarnation of Janis Joplin. Is Shirley Temple dead?
I don't think she is yet. I think she's still hanging on.
I think Shirley Temple is still alive. You could not be the reincarnation of Shirley Temple or Janet Jackson.
That's true. Unless something happened to Janet Jackson. I think she's okay.
I think she's probably okay, too. She's no Irving Kirshner.
Or Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, I did enjoy, and I think he would have appreciated, the number of people who were just like, he's gone to a better place. A better place? What is it? Well, it's a construct that helps us cope with grief, but that's not important right now. And, the number of people who said that, Leslie Nielsen's dead? Surely you can't be serious.
Yep. I don't know. Do you think he would have appreciated that, or do you think he would have just thought,
It was a loving homage, you know, like...
That's a question, though. Is the obvious joke worth making? Is the obvious joke worth making publicly?
I think the obvious joke is worth making first. Like, if you're...
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
If you log on to... Say if I log on to Facebook and I read through my news feed and nobody else has said, Leslie Nielsen's dead, surely you can't be serious, I'm going to say it.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to be the 10th guy to post it.
I guess I did make the all fun and games joke about the guy at Comic-Con.
Right.
And I was one of 1,000 people who had made that joke, but I was the first one that I was aware of to do it, at least. Uh-huh. But that's the thing. You're the first person that you're aware of to do it, but you're not going to be the first person that most of the people who see your joke are aware of to say it. Unless you're in a very limited limited circle of friends, none of whom are funny.
Right, well, what if what you're doing is immersing yourself in the shared grief of everyone who's making that joke? Huh. Are we doing it to be funny, or are we doing it as kind of a tribute, you know?
I don't know. I mean, back when I had asymmetric.net, I used to, I remember posting a little tribute thing about Alec Guinness and posting a little tribute thing about Douglas Adams and then thinking, I'm going to stop doing that. It is what it is.
Yeah, I don't know, like when Patrick Swayze died, that actually did kind of bum me out. Like, he seemed like a decent dude. He made some movies that were fun to watch. It just didn't seem like a guy that you want to, you don't want anybody to go down that way. But, I was genuinely bummed and actually took some solace in everybody making dumb jokes about the movie Ghost.
Oh, yeah?
And then somebody throwing in Roadhouse, just for the hell of it.
And a Roundhouse.
Yeah. And a porterhouse.
Those kind of jokes are right in your wheelhouse as a comedy writer.
That's true. Yeah, I am the wheelwright and the wainwright and the boatswain.
And the barrow white.
Yeah.
Wait, a wheelbarrow, a wheelwright, and a barrow white. Dick Sargent, Dick York.
Panama.
I was talking to Pantsless at Columbus and had discussed whether or not I was going to go to the Orlando meetup, and I said that I would like to go, but I don't want to get on an airplane, and we decided that maybe we would go around the horn. like drive to San Diego and take a boat to Florida.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I was thinking you could just drive to California and take a boat down through the Panama Canal.
Yeah, we discussed that, too, but then you'd have to take one back. Apparently, you can do that. There are, like, 2-week cruises from San Diego to Florida that go through the Panama Canal, but then he pointed out, but then you'd have to take a 2-week cruise back.
Yeah, I think
the opposite direction. And you might run into yourself and cause a Panama Canal paradox.
That's true, because the Panama Canal actually exists out of the time stream.
Yeah. Everything that happens at the Panama Canal happens simultaneously, which is why it is crucial that you only ever go there once.
Yeah, and it's just the same 10 ships over and over.
Yeah, well, you got to make sure that you if you do go back a second time, that you're going the same direction, because they and they have to be sure that they keep everyone in a very orderly line, that no one ever goes backwards or even actually looks backwards, because then
you turn into a paradox
will ripple out through the time stream, manifesting itself as everyone turning into a pillar of salt.
Yeah.
This is what the Bible teaches us, Mr. Scott.
Why do you suppose a pillar? Like, not a statue of herself made out of salt, but like a pillar. I mean, like, how tall was the pillar? A pillar is not a size.
How
right?
green was my valley?
Yeah. Actually, like, a pillar is not a unit of measurement, nor is it a thing that everybody knows how big one is.
Yeah.
It could be a variable size. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily a killer for the thing, because, oh, she looked backwards and turned into a rock.
Right. Well, what do you mean? How big was the rock? Was it a pebble? Was it a boulder?
You know? But it is weird, right?
Do you suppose the original was she looked back and turned into, like, a shit ton of salt, like, seriously? They're like,
yeah.
You know, we need to tighten that up a little bit. We got to bring that in.
Yeah. We need to make it something. You know what? People live in buildings. Buildings have a lot of pillars on them. Everybody knows what that is and how big it is.
A bunch of stuff.
Yeah. What was she even looking at? Was she sad to be leaving Buttsex Town? Was that the story?
Yeah, the angel told him not to look back, and it didn't really matter why. I don't know why, but the moral of the story is anything that one of God's people tells you to do, you just do. Otherwise, you get turned into an indeterminate amount of salt.
But was she leaving Sodom?
Yes.
Okay. And she was leaving Sodom for what reason? To get away from the butt sex?
No, because God was destroying the town, because then two angels had come and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, so, I mean, is it an allegory about how if your house burns down, you shouldn't look to see if your babies are alive inside the house? Because clearly God has decided it's time for your house to burn down, and that part of your life is over.
Well,
so just look
forward,
buddy.
All of her family was in front of her, though. She was, I guess, maybe, like, taking a moment to mourn the beautiful butt-sex life that they had in Sodom.
And, oh, man, what if the last thing that went through her head was, oh, fuck, did I leave the oven on? Salt.
Yeah.
And then she thought about salt for a second while half of her brain was made of salt.
Right.
The other half still capable of thinking about it.
You know,
maybe they meant like a caryatid. So, like, when she turned into salt, she became a pillar of salt because she was just salt shaped like a woman.
Oh, I guess.
Because you wouldn't say a statue of salt because, like, what is that? Like a sculpture of the concept of salt?
Right.
And what does that look like? Just a giant cube?
Angelina Jolie.
A tiny cube? Is a grain of salt a statue of salt from the right perspective?
Yeah, depending on how tall you are, sure.
Or depending on its presentation. I mean, let's say you put a grain of salt on a pedestal in a museum. Oh, man, speaking of which, you know what I saw? Was I saw that urinal with our mutt written on it.
Live?
Yes.
And in person? Was it a powerful experience?
It was. It was laying on its back, presumably so that people wouldn't pee in it. But that didn't stop me.
It was upside down as by design, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was basically mounted on the floor instead of on the wall.
Huh.
At least the way it was. I mean, I'm assuming that it was presented at this museum in the way that it was presented originally.
Sure, because it would lose all meaning.
Have you ever been to Philadelphia?
I don't think so.
It's,
I'm pretty sure I haven't, actually.
I wish that I had been in a little better shape while I was there. Under the weather than I had been the days before and the days after, but it struck me as being like New York, but with the volume turned down by about 40%.
Hmm.
Maybe slightly dirtier, but maybe not. A lot of suburbs around it instead of just even more sprawl. But yeah, it was neat. Went to the Mutter Museum of Medical Oddities. Saw some things that I literally will never be able to get out of my head. I'm not like disturbed by them, but some things that were like enough that I like a few fetuses in jars that I can understand why somebody would see that and then, you know, not be able to scrub that image from their brain for the rest of their life.
Right.
Yeah, just some in particular. It was a neat place. I was expecting more, based on a documentary that I saw about the Mutter Museum, randomly given to me by a stripper who thought that I would be interested in it. I was expecting a lot more, like, devices and stuff, because that's what the documentary focused on. It didn't actually show any of the actual kind of human tissue exhibits, but then that's what most of the museum was, was bones and sort of preserved. Look at the size of this guy's colon. Here it is, laying out in a big case. And then there were some photographs of a guy with a massive gut, even though the rest of him was totally scrawny and he never pooped.
The end.
So, just an entire lifetime's worth of poop in a giant colon, just being carried around.
In a pair of parentheses.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of fetuses, a lot of, you know, I think there were some penises, with some disorders.
Do they have Rasputin's penis there, or is that somewhere else?
I don't know.
I think you would know, if you saw it. You'd be like, that is a giant, Soviet sorcerer dick right there.
So there were a large number of, skulls, all of which had the, like, cause of death. And, a surprising number were suicide due to a discovered theft.
Huh.
And I don't know what that is.
Like, oh my god, they stole my bong. I have to end it all.
Yeah, in the 1700s. I mean, maybe in the 1700s, your bong was all you had. So, if some motherfucker stole it, like, your life was just over. Like, you spent your entire life, you know, which probably was a, you know, you probably weren't going to make it to 30. So,
yeah, so not a whole lot of life.
At 17, you had spent your entire life saving up for a bong, dutifully saving your allowance, and then somebody stole it. Yeah, I can see why you'd maybe want to hang yourself.
All of the hours that you worked in, like, dangerous mills. I guess that was pre-industrial revolution. Dangerous mines. Where you mined statues of salt.
Where, dangerous mines, where Michelle Pfeiffer taught you the difference between Dylan Thomas and Bob Dylan Thomas.
Yep, like every day you just kind of walked through the valley of the shadow of death.
Mm-hmm.
And you took a look at your life and realized that there was nothing left except that bong.
Yeah. Kids, this is a Coolio joke.
It is. The kids today are into the Coolio, aren't they?
The white kids are, at least.
Yeah.
I think the urban youth are over it.
He was kind of the Kanye West of our time, wasn't he? It was Coolio.
The white folks Kanye, were all about like, the... My understanding is that... Oh, just because white people like him? I think Kanye West has more going on than Coolio did.
Well, yeah, I would say Kanye's a little more talented, but just, like, the rapper that everybody had the album, regardless of skin color. Or at least everybody liked that song.
Right.
You know the guy who sang the hook on that song? Is CeeLo. I just occurred
really?
To me. Yeah, the same dude as Gnarls Barkley and Fuck You.
As Gnarls Barkley and himself?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I don't like about Gnarls Barkley? There are two things that I don't like about Gnarls Barkley.
The fact that
One
their name is
Gnarls is their Barkley. Retarded fucking name.
Right.
And two, that they, like, did a cover of a Violent Femmes song that probably made them more money than the Violent Femmes ever made in their career.
What Violent Femmes song did they cover?
Gone Daddy Gone.
Huh.
Like, when I became aware of Gnarls Barkley because of their radio hit, which was a Violent Femmes cover, and almost no one knew that it was a Violent Femmes cover.
Their radio hit was crazy, though.
This was slightly before that.
Oh, okay.
I think it might have been on the same album. But, like, they had broken and were playing at Lollapalooza before Crazy was on the radio.
No kidding.
Yeah, and they just seeing... Also, the Violent Femmes were at Lollapalooza. And seeing that... actually, were they? I don't remember if they were or not. I'm old, so I get music festivals mixed up.
Right. Also, all the drugs you do in all of these music festivals.
Oh, man, yeah. Man. I actually did some drugs at one of those musical festivals.
Were they aspirin?
At Lollapalooza, everyone else that I was with dropped acid, but I did not.
That's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, so doing that, not you're abstaining from it.
They all had a really good time.
I'm sure.
But how easily
could they have had a terrible time?
Hey, let's drop acid and watch the goddamn Red Hot fucking Chili Peppers play at Lollapalooza. Then I had to pee so bad I had to leave the concert to find a toilet. And then the next time I saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I had a fucking kidney stone. Something about seeing the Red Hot Chili Peppers in concert gives me sort of like urinary problems.
Hmm.
Luckily, I never have to do that again. So what have you been up to since... How was the drive back from Columbus? I didn't ask you.
I got... I don't want to go on a rant here, but I got a speeding ticket on the way back.
Oh, yeah?
And it was kind of total horseshit and reminds me that... it reminded me of how much I hate the Highway Patrol and everything that they stand for. Like, if there were policemen whose job was to make sure nobody was driving like an asshole and to pull people out of wrecks or to, you know, jump your car, shit like that, that would be fine, but...
Ooh, like jump it on a motorcycle?
Yeah.
Like just put your car at the bottom of a gorge?
Of a gorge, yeah. If your car is at the bottom of a gorge and I looked up and I saw some dude flying across on a motorcycle, then I would say there was a use for the motherfucking Highway Patrol. But what they do...
You'd be proud of your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, it's like, what they do is wait until a pod of cars with like six cars in it goes by them going 2 miles an hour faster than the arbitrary number of miles an hour over the speed limit they've decided is okay. And they grab the one guy with out-of-state plates and give him a ticket because they know he's not going to go to court and say, that was horseshit. There's no way he could have even got me on the radar because there was a car in front of me, behind me, and to my left and right. Duh. So, yeah,
were you doing some sort of, like, aerial photography art where you were making an upside-down cross? Because maybe that was why.
I was
he
trying
singled
to...
you out because you clearly looked the most satanic.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
I got two. I got two speeding tickets. Not to be the guy that won up.
All right then.
But I got two speeding tickets on the way. But one on the way to Philly, which I absolutely deserved. I got a ticket for going like 90 in a 60.
Oh my.
Yeah, which, you know, all right, exceeding the speed limit by 50%, like whatever. But then another one the next day for going fucking 79 in a 70, like not even passing anyone. I have never been pulled over for going less than 10 over.
Right.
I kind of think about this. I was reading some argument. I had a lot of time to think about this as I was very carefully watching my speed for the entire rest of the fucking week.
Huh.
I was reading some argument on Metafilter about... apparently another thing that people will get very upset about on Metafilter is people who ride bicycles saying... fuck you, everybody who drives a car, and then people who drive cars saying, what?
Right.
Like, you know, all of the problems you're describing are your fault. What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, how dare these cars hit me when I, like, randomly pull out in front of them on my bike? But, so, somebody who is, clearly an avid cyclist talks about how horrible cars are and says that, you know, the majority of the time that cars are in operation, they are going faster than the speed limit. And I kind of got to thinking, like, that's clearly a thing, right? Like, everyone speeds all the time.
Yes.
And it seems like what they probably do, if they're thinking about it, is they set the speed limit such that, all right, well, we know about what people feel like they can get away with, which is, say, 10 or what I used to consider 14 miles per hour over the speed limit as the safe threshold, right? Clearly, sometimes that's not going to work. But most of the time, it does. Like, I feel like, in general, I have been prepared to pay for the speeding tickets that I accumulate just naturally by chance over the course of my life by going 14 miles an hour over the speed limit on the freeway.
Right.
You obviously can't stop people from doing it, which kind of sucks. Right? So you just have to sort of fake it. I had decided that rather than taking my six-year-old and rapidly failing GPS with me on this trip, I would just get a new one because they've gotten... Like, I got a much nicer GPS for, like, a quarter of what my old GPS cost.
Sure.
And it's got this feature that tells you what the speed limit is all the time, which is handy, because then you can use that to gauge how far over the speed limit you should go, which I stuck to 4 miles an hour over the speed limit the entire fucking time after I got that second ticket.
See, what killed me was we had just entered some wide patch in the road where it dropped from 70 to 55.
Yeah.
So I was doing 79 in a 55. So that's unfortunate. I don't know what... So he gave me the ticket, which was just this sheet of paper that said, in 4 to 6 weeks, we'll send you a postcard telling you how much money you can pay us or what court date you can schedule.
Huh.
So I'm just kind of waiting to see how much money these jackfucks want. And, yeah, I'm still... I know that the fact that I say this keeps happening to me where I'm doing the same thing everybody else is doing and I get singled out is incredibly suspect. Right? But it really does seem that way. Like, when I'm in Arizona in a rental car now, I'm the guy who gets pulled over, even if there are people blowing by me.
Yeah.
And I call bullshit. Like, if you were in the highway patrol, just kill yourself now. Or maybe find another job.
I knew some guys in the highway patrol that weren't complete pricks. Both of the cops were at least not assholes to me, which was, they're just doing their jobs, Mr. Skullhead. Yeah. Why don't you think of how the TSA people feel?
Well, I'm friends with a dude in the TSA, so that's easy.
Are you actually friends with a dude in the TSA?
Yeah, one of the dudes who was at our Arkham Horror game.
Oh, man, I wish I had known so I would have rubbed my dick on him.
Yeah, you could have grabbed his balls and be like, how do you feel, fascist? He would have been like, a little lower. And you'd be like, how do you feel, fascist? Now, I didn't do my usual, Donald Duck freak out, which I tend to do every time I get pulled over. Usually I will tell the officer, I'm sorry, but this is bullshit. You know that the speed limit is this, and you know that everybody drives this, and it's dangerous to drive the speed limit on this road. And for some reason, every time I do that, instead of arresting me or hitting me with something, they give me a warning instead of a ticket.
Huh.
So this time, I didn't trust myself to speak. I was so pissed. And the guy just said, I'm giving you a ticket because you were speeding. I went, okay. And so I got a ticket. So maybe I just should have mouthed off at him.
Yeah.
But one of these days, one of these days, they're just going to hit me with a club and put me in a squad car.
Yeah, I don't know, man. When I got pulled over for the 79, I thought that the speed limit was 60 where I was, and so I didn't argue. If I had known that the speed limit was actually 70 and I was getting a fucking ticket for going 9 over the speed limit, I would have, not started shit with him, but I would have just said, man, how fast do you want me to drive on this road? Like, just tell me how fast to go relative to the speed limit, and I will do it. Because, people were passing me, and this is bullshit.
Right.
But I think you're right. It's the out-of-state plates,
And it's rough. I understand in most places there's kind of an unofficial 10 miles over, or 10% of the speed limit over is the same as going the speed limit. But that's the thing. It's not like the sign says, speed limit 70... with gusts up to 77. You just kind of have to know. You go into Arkansas, and it's an absolute law, which is a pain in the ass, but at least makes sense, right? So, going 71, they could technically pull you over.
Right.
Might as well. Do it that way. And I know that we can't catch all the murderers or all the robbers, but if you can't catch everybody that's speeding on a road, they're right there, you know where they are, then I don't think you have the right to catch anybody. Save it for the people who are driving dangerously, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're driving fast.
Yeah. Yeah, what about the people who are driving looking backwards?
Yeah.
What about the people who are driving backwards?
What about the trucks who are driving 15 miles over the limit over cars? Yeah.
Yeah, like Bigfoot.
Exactly. What about the monster trucks? Nobody ever pulls over the monster trucks.
I saw on this trip one of those semis with a big monster face, like a mouth with big nasty teeth over its grill.
So it had like
it's
a
funny, it had a grill over its grill.
Grill, yeah.
Now that grill has come to mean that, that's a funny thing. I guess that must be the etymology of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, the grill of your car becomes a... Yeah, okay. Never mind. That's not as funny as I thought.
So it was a truck that was designed to freak the fuck out of people who have read Maximum Overdrive or seen the movie?
Yeah. Although, did the book actually have that? I think that might have been just that might have just been a mechanism. A movie-only mechanism to put a face onto evil.
I think evil's a little scarier when it doesn't have a face. Or if it just has eyes without a face.
Right.
That's scary.
One thing that happened when we were in New Orleans is we got to meet and hang out with Artie Effham.
Oh, that's cool. Oops. How was that?
Just swell as swell can be. It was a fantastic evening. Had a good amount of fun. We went to the dungeon, and then later found out when we went on our New Orleans Phantom Ghost Tour that the dungeon is actually a vampire bar, and that people go there and drink each other's blood.
Neat.
Yeah, and then we were like, wait a minute. We drank there all night last night, and nobody drank our blood, and we didn't drink anybody's blood. And if you say the right thing to the bartender, he'll give you a drink with blood in it. I'm beginning to think that this New Orleans Ghost Phantom Vampire Mystery Tour was bullshit, Mr. Skullhead.
Did you try giving him $14?
I didn't. There were several places that we walked by that had a gal behind a tub, and I thought of that.
Oh, by the way, I think that's been posted.
Oh, great.
To their site.
Can't wait for that to go.
Yeah, if you want to hear Jick get... shit gets a little too real on that podcast. It's kind of great. Let's see. Episode 4. AONpodcast.com. Having listened to all previous of the podcasts, I can vouch for their quality. And the one that we're on, I can definitely.
The first one was definitely, like, it's hard to say, like, would I have considered that worth listening to if I didn't know these people? And I think yes.
Mm-hmm.
The sound quality of the one of the segments on the first one was really terrible. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. This one, AONpodcast.com. We sat down with those guys while Jick was in town, and we had a few too many drinks, and the interview got pretty candid, I would say. It's good. It's fascinating stuff, and I don't think that you come off in a negative light at all. Just, like, uncharacteristically honest, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what was going on there. Well, I mean, I know what was going on. It was that I was incredibly drunk.
Right.
That was the day it was your fault, Mr. Skullhead. That was the day that we went on the brewery tour. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't usually like drinking this early. And then you were like, well, you know, you're only going to get a couple of tiny beers. And then it's like, oh, by the way, I'm here with my kid, so you're going to have your allotment of beer and my allotment of beer.
No, you only had a third of my allotment of beer.
I don't know, man. You're right. Because some of it you gave to your kid.
Yeah.
So
check that out. Columbus, I have nothing but good things to say about Columbus.
Yeah, Columbus was fun.
I don't have anything good to say about the security guard at the hotel in Columbus. But the organizers of the meet, the attendees of the meet, I have nothing but high praise for.
Yep. I get to have some fun interactions with the Columbus police.
Yep, you this and was the NWA.
This was a good trip for getting in trouble.
Mm.
Although I didn't really get in trouble anywhere. Nor did I get in any young ladies in trouble in a family way, which is usually what happens.
Hmm.
I didn't go around breaking young girls' hearts. I think I've just discovered a really long hair growing out of my ear, Mr. Skullhead. Does that mean I'm old?
I think so. I have to regularly take one of those little miniature sets of clippers and apply them to my ears. Otherwise, I get just, like, little pixie forests.
Oh, man, we went to a Mongolian barbecue place and found a clone of you.
Yeah, that was kind of freaky. Like, I'm used
to... looked just like you and was wearing the same color hoodie.
I'm used to dudes biting my style, which I maintain it was my style because I was the first guy in Phoenix to do it. But, a dude kind of built like me, bald with the goatee, glasses, and wearing a bright yellow hoodie, which the only reason I have that bright yellow hoodie is because that was the color of hoodie that was available in my size on the clearance rack, but...
Hmm.
Apparently somebody else bought one of those, too.
The clearance rack?
Yeah, clearance rack. He's this guy who sells hoodies out of his trunk.
Is he related to Clarence Darrow? Or Wheel Darrow?
Yes, he's related to Darrow White's. I made myself a nice Darrow White omelet the other day.
Like egg whites. Okay.
Yes.
I prefer Darrow beaters. Have you ever had egg beaters?
Somebody had those on a trip up to a cabin. And I was going to make my famous pancakes, and they're like, I said, do you have any eggs? And they handed me a carton. Not like an egg carton, which has eggs in it, but like a milk carton, only instead of full of milk, it was full of egg snot.
Yeah. Really? But it wasn't really egg snot, right? Isn't that like some sort of soy snot? Like, I can't believe it's not eggs.
Possibly.
Man, I'm going to have some chickens before too long, Mr. Skullhead. I think this coming weekend I'm building a coop.
Are you going to hire
a cooper? It's going to be sort of a co-op coop. I'm gonna have all my neighbors help.
And I think you should hire a cooper to do it.
Oh, right, yeah. Just have, that'll make it much easier to shoot the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
If I just keep them in a barrel.
No, egg beaters are actual eggs.
Oh, are they?
They're egg-based, yeah.
Egg-based? Like B-A-S-T-E?
No, like B-A-S-E-D.
Hmm.
They're real egg products that taste great and have no cholesterol. You know, they got you with a real egg, but then they throw in the word product, which, mm-hmm. You know, like a...
Oh, speaking of which, one thing I didn't do in Philadelphia was have an authentic Philly cheesesteak with the cheese product.
Right.
I'd like to try it, but I just don't know, man. I just don't know about that cheese whiz thing, because I like a cheesesteak. Man, you know what they have in cities is fucking good cheesesteak places. In the time that I spent in New York and the time that I spent in San Francisco, I managed to find just phenomenal cheesesteak places by trying out several cheesesteak places.
Mm.
And just, it's like cities like that specialize in like food that you can just kind of grab and take with you and eat without getting dirty. You know, and these cheesesteaks are wrapped up such that, man, are they good. Yeah, so that's what I have to say about cheesesteaks.
They're delicious.
You got your kid a bed, I heard. Your kid escaped the confines of the crib.
Yeah, once he can climb out of the crib, you gotta get him a bed.
Is that really a thing?
Well, you don't have to, but one of these days, climbing out of the crib, he's gonna land on his head and hurt himself.
I see. Couldn't you just turn the crib upside down?
Yeah, that keeps him from getting out of it. The mattress keeps landing on his head, though.
Well, no, you put the mattress on the floor.
Oh, I suppose that would make more sense.
Yeah.
You know, we got him a bed. It's like a little miniature version of a people bed.
Oh, yeah?
It's adorable.
Does it have a spot under the mattress for a little miniature version of a porn magazine?
Excuse me. I think so. We gave him a bunch of miniature dollar bills that he can stuff under there.
Oh, yeah. Have you pulled out any of his teeth to put them under the pillow yet?
No, we'll get there.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah, he hasn't been bad enough for us to have to pull any teeth.
Yeah. I've heard kids don't like that.
Yeah, trying to pull their teeth, it's like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Anyway, it has been a long time since we did a radio show on account of all these travelings.
It has.
Things should be back to normal, I think. I don't see any reason why we would skip any shows for the next several months.
Yeah, not at all.
Nothing I'm aware of is going to interfere with that. So yeah, let's look at this forum thread. I haven't looked at the Twitter to see if anybody bothered to reply to the Twitters. Man, I am peeved. Says you need to start putting out suckier items of the month. At my present rate, I think I'm spending more on KOL than I would a WoW subscription. Yeah, it doesn't take much. You only have to give us twice as much money as the minimum amount of money that you can give us for us to be more expensive than WoW.
Yeah, don't worry, we got you covered.
Yeah. Damian P says auto attack disabling against the third Nemesis assassin. I guess. I think that's a thing we can do now. Like, I think it's a thing we can do easily. Somebody wrote some crazy stuff that didn't make any sense, and then it looks like they deleted it. Maybe it wasn't supposed to be an at reply to us, but really didn't make any sense. Fred Levi writes that iced coffee is totally coffee. I had leftover ice, so I got a coffee with triple cream and sugar, poured it in the ice, same thing. I don't know.
Leftover ice from what? I think you're throwing us into the middle of the story here, Fred.
Yeah, well, maybe he was listening to us say something. Maybe I said that iced coffee was not coffee, because in order for iced coffee to not be terrible, you have to put so much cream and sugar in it that it is effectively like a milkshake.
Right, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
See, to me, regular coffee is like that, too, where you almost have to turn it into, like, hot cocoa with a little bit of coffee in it to be able to drink it.
Oh, yeah, no, boy, I'm a black coffee dude. Coffee dude.
I know you are, and that's fine.
But what am I, Mr. Skullhead? Yeah. What am I?
J.H. Westover hates me forever because I iced you.
Oh, yeah?
I iced Pezboy, too, at Columbus. That was fantastic.
You did, man.
I did it ironically, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, you, if you ironically, you're gonna ironically whirlwind? What is it that you sow that makes you reap the whirlwind?
The wind.
You sow the wind and reap the whirlwind?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So you've ironically sown the wind, and I think you might have to non-ironically reap the whirlwind.
See, there's no lose state for me here, because I'm okay with drinking an alcoholic beverage in the middle of the day in a, like, social setting, and yeah. I don't mind what the taste of Smirnoff Ice.
Yeah, I mean, so. I don't mind the taste of Smirnoff Ice. It's not, you know what would be fucking worse is like if it was like a Four Loko.
Mm.
Like bros Four Lokoing bros. Not to keep talking, like, I get it that talking about Four Loko is now suddenly like the fucking vuvuzela of this month.
Right.
But there was some of that floating around at Columbus, and Jesus Christ, is that shit foul.
I honestly don't think
that our civil liberties are suffering at all as a result of that being made illegal.
They had, I spilled a tablespoonful of that on the carpet in that hotel room, and the entire room smelled like the fake-ass watermelon smell.
I mean, I like the fake watermelon taste, but there was something. I don't know what the fuck it is about energy drinks that they've decided these have to taste like ass. I feel like you could get all of those chemicals into something that, say, tasted like Mountain Dew.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, unless it is the case that, like, enough caffeine for it to be, like, an energy drink level of caffeine is, like, so bitter that you can no longer cancel it out with sweet or something.
I mean, I doubt that, because I don't think any of those have more caffeine in them than, like, Jolt did.
Yeah. And Jolt just tasted like cola.
Yeah, it was just cola with a, you know, it had that little chemical aftertaste, but, I mean, energy drinks are just kind of dumb. You know, they're, cracked.com, my source for everything that I know, pointed out that, like, one of the things that they always talk about being in there is just another way of getting a shit ton of caffeine in there, like guarana or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
and
like it is
taurine is a sedative. So, like, there are ingredients that do nothing, ingredients that are caffeine, and one that they know to be a sedative.
So well, and ingredients that are supplements that fucking do nothing, like all supplements. I mean, the, like, and the reason that you know that it does nothing is because it's not a pill that you get at a pharmacy. You know? It's like a thing they can just put in a beverage and sell it to you. Therefore, it doesn't fucking do anything. Because if it was medicine, you'd have to be a doctor to give it to someone.
Or a Walgreens.
You know, which is not to say that, like, aspirin doesn't do anything, because clearly it does, right? But, like, the things that are, like, nutritional supplements, the things that are not, yeah, I don't know. That well, shit just doesn't do anything.
If it can't be explained what their method of efficacy is and what the recommended dosage is and what a dangerous dosage is, then it's not medicine. I think, though, that the reason they all taste like that is because Red Bull kind of blazed that trail. And I think that I believe that Red Bull tastes that way because it was made to pander to people on ecstasy. And they, you know, you want everything that you taste on ecstasy is incredible. So, like, orange juice tastes awesome. So what if it was even sourer than that? You know, it's like, give you this amazing, overwhelming taste sensation. And I'm sure if I had a Red Bull on ecstasy, I'd be like, God, that's delicious. And then I would have a heart attack because I was having a bunch of caffeine while on ecstasy. But still, yeah. It's all Red Bull's fault.
You know what? You know what's really awesome on ecstasy is drinking so much water that you get that sort of, like, you know, electrolyte deficiency that makes you die.
Yeah, that shit is tight.
Yeah. You know what I found to be really awesome on ecstasy?
Freaking out like a big old pussy?
Yeah, just freaking the fuck out. Just being like, oh, what the fuck, 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 what the fuck. That's what I did. I'm like, crap, I can't move my hands. Oh, wait, yes, I can. Fuck, I can't move my hands. Oh wait, you know, there it goes.
Didn't totally you like
what I wanted to do?
Didn't you like
fuck,
drink?
I can't move my hands.
Didn't you like drink a bottle of whiskey and smoke a bunch of weed and drop a tab of acid and then take the ecstasy though? So like, which one of these is the culprit?
Well, it was definitely the ecstasy that made me freak out. Was the thing like I was not under ideal circumstances, but the only thing that would have made it like being it's like oh here don't take ecstasy if you're tired. Right? Like, that's not a thing that you would say to someone.
No, not at all. Don't take ecstasy I mean, if you're drunk or high would be totally something I'd say to someone, though.
But this was, like, the very end of the night. I mean, it like, I had been out drinking and was about to go to bed. And we decided to take some ecstasy.
Right, right.
Because we're, you know, we're smart.
We used to do drugs back in the day, kids. Drugs.
Man, I'm high as a kite right now.
I'm drinking a beer. Drinking a Grain Belt.
Oh, yeah?
Grain Belt's Northeast.
I haven't done any drinking since I left Austin, Texas. Yeah. So I guess that means I have gone one day without drinking.
Wow.
I drove 16 hours that day, though. Well, I probably drove like 10 hours. That was a long drive from Austin to Phoenix.
Yeah, like by the time you got to Phoenix, she was waking.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I shouldn't get drunk. Just get in a fight.
Right.
So there's this forum thread that forum. King Stupid was kind enough to put together for us.
Oh, right. Yeah, let's hop in there. I thought you were talking about the forum thread.
Agburanar says, I really like the non-outfit synergies, such as the Secret from the Future rewards. Any plans to include more items like that in upcoming content, or was I the only person that liked them? What did those do? I don't remember. I remember you designing those, and then me telling CD Moyer, do it.
Each item has an elemental resistance that multiplies when you have multiple pieces of the outfit, you have multiple pieces of that set on.
Yep.
It's like one has stench and one has sleazy, and put them together and you have like 2x stench and 2x sleazy.
Oh, okay. Exactorate says, have you guys given any more thought to allowing players to pick and switch Hardcore Ascension rewards for the next run? Yes. Something will eventually happen that will hopefully make you guys happy about that kind of lead-in nonsense. I'm a casual ascender, says Baxilan. I exist, really, and I just started Hardcore Oxy 2 weeks ago. I'm going fast for me, but I'm probably still not going to finish until at least a week into December. Should I have to worry about dropping the casual to take part in Crimbo Goodness, or will the adventure-consuming parts start later, like last year? You will probably be fine. You might have to hustle a little bit if you miss the, you know, if you don't have a lot of adventures to spend the first week, you might have to hustle a little bit, but there won't be stuff that you can't do
right. Because
of that. There's not going to be anything that's like available on the 3rd of December that's not still available on the 8th of December, for instance. Isolate says, this past week has seen a couple of Feast of Boris-related records fall, including 2-day softcore teat and 4-day hardcore teat. Concerning or inevitable and acceptable power creep? I mean, Feast of Boris runs are always going to be faster, right? And that's kind of fine, because that's a neat thing that you can do, you know?
And it's every 90 days you get one, so...
Fixer says, does planning and executing Crimbo content take an unusual amount of time and effort? Do you ever wish you could have a normal holiday with your family and not have to worry about game stuff? The problem is we always do have normal holidays with our family and don't worry about game stuff, and then we're like, oh, fuck.
Right.
It's,
we do tend to think that we're done and then do a whole bunch more stuff and then think that we're done and then do a whole bunch more stuff.
I mean, it always requires a lot of scrambling, but I find those crunches to be really gratifying.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that I would be able to do it. I don't think I would be able to be like that all the time. You know, and if it took much longer than Crimbo usually takes, then I would not be super happy about it, I don't think. But, you know, it's neat. It's fine. It's like... Yeah, it's, you know.
I enjoy it because it forces me to work on something and put aside time and actually get it done, and then it immediately goes into the game and people get to see it.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Just like sit and work and then you're done and then it's done and then it's out there.
It kind of sucks. The part of Crimbo that sucks is that the Mr. Skullhead rant has become the like clown shoes of the holiday. It's kind of weird. Like, anything that I say is like, oh, that was a decent rant, Scully, but I know you're saving up your big one. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that was really just a thing that happened because of a particular thing that one time.
Right.
You know, it's not like... I mean, you know, it's... We don't get to pick what traditions the community develops and cares about, right?
Like, I mean, like, but I know that I'm known for making posts that have profanity in them and posts that are a little bit upset, but that one epic thing was just this perfect storm of complaints that I took to be whining from an enormous sense of entitlement combined with insults about our work ethic that I didn't think were warranted. So,
right.
You know. Like, in the Crimbo thread now, they're like, what do you wish for Christmas? And kind of tongue-in-cheek, I said, I wish that people wouldn't speculate so much about Crimbo and make this like rigid set of parameters that will make it what they consider good and kind of set themselves up for disappointment and for me to be curmudgeonly. And people are like, oh, that was a good mini rant, Skullhead, but we're looking forward to the big one. Like, yeah, I'm just talking. Just talking. You'll know
maybe,
what I'm
I mean,
ranting,
maybe,
motherfucker.
You know, maybe that's just, you're that guy now. You're the guy who everything you say is a rant.
I guess.
Yeah, and when you're just like, hey, could you tell me what time it is? Boy, that rant sucked.
Yeah, dude, come on, Scully.
You got all faggy in your old age.
Boy, I chewed the asshole out of a dude at the supermarket today.
Yeah?
Which, speaking of, hey, I'm not that curmudgeonly guy who's always ranting. But I was like, I just pulled Ollie out of the car in the parking lot and standing there, and a guy came within a couple of feet of me holding Ollie. So that he could pull into the spot next to us and then pull forward into the spot adjacent. And so I handed the boy to Jess and walked over. And intended to just say, you're like, hey man, be more careful. But, you know, I had been scared for a second for the life of my child, and that turned into rage at the threat to the life of my child and just unloaded on this guy. Yeah, I'm not proud. It did feel good.
Did he cry?
No, he was like maybe a 60-year-old guy, and I just said, do you know how close you came to my kid, motherfucker? You need to watch where the fuck you're going. And he walked up and, like, just poked his finger into my chest and looked at me. And it said, like, well, I thought you were getting into the car. It's like, you still almost ran me over. And get your fucking hands off me and get the fuck away from me and my family. Meanwhile, my wife is kind of trying to pull me away before some 60-year-old guy kicks my ass. Because that would be embarrassing for everyone involved. I don't think there would be any way to win that fight.
I have found myself, and I don't know how you feel about this. I have found myself trying really hard when I am in a contentious situation to not use any profanity, because I feel like that just opens people up to, oh, you're acting belligerent,
right?
And so you just lose some credibility.
I certainly did.
I came to that conclusion when I was getting into an argument with the Comic-Con freebie table guy about the level of profanity in our publication. And I just allowed a little bit of... I don't like smugness in the opposition, and I don't like giving the opposition any excuse for being smug.
Right. I understand that if you're coming at someone with the intent of making them feel sorry and apologize, that there's no point in coming at them angry. Because unless you're somehow able to scare them enough that they're contrite, that's just going to provoke a defensive angry response.
My dad once had a confrontation like that with a guy who then went and killed himself.
Wow.
Like, I think he was on his way to kill himself anyway, was how the story turned out. But, yeah, that... I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
Huh.
But I was playing out in the yard, and some guy, like, squealed his tires and went over the curb, sort of, like, shortcutting around the corner, going through part of the yard where I was in, and Dad, I think had a police car at the time, so, like, chased the guy down and yelled at him.
Oh, man.
And then the guy killed himself.
This guy just went into the grocery store, which was where we were going to.
Oh, sweet.
So there was this kind of awkward, like, passed by him in the frozen foods aisle. Kind of, both of us looked at him, each other, like, are we gonna start some more shit, or are we done? Like, okay, we're done.
That would be a great place to get into a fight, though, because then you could just grab a bag of frozen peas to use to soothe your wounds.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, he could. You wouldn't have any wounds.
He honestly... If I were stupid enough to start a fight with anybody who was willing to fight me, that would indicate that they would win.
Oh, yeah?
If they were sure enough of their fighting ability, you know, you say that nobody's falling down drunk in this scenario, but if somebody is sure enough in his fighting ability to actually come to blows with me, who has no fighting ability whatsoever, or at least no experience, they're gonna win. There's somebody who's been in some fights before, say, and they're totally gonna win. That dude would have housed me.
So you're saying that they would just evaluate your size, or what? I mean, what is the deciding that they could take you?
I mean, somebody who has...
Anyone who's willing to get into a fight would beat you in a fight?
Yeah, because I'm not. You know, I'm gonna yell at somebody and maybe puff myself up, you know, and hope that they back down, right? Because... I've never been in a fight, and I don't really ever want to be. So somebody who's just like, yeah, okay, let's fight. I'm familiar with fights. I've been in many of them. Let's do this. No, they would wipe the floor with me. This guy was 60 years old and smaller than I am and probably would have kicked the shit out of me. I'm just going to go ahead and say
it. Do people get into fights anymore? It seems as though, like, I cannot imagine a situation in which I would feel safe punching a dude. Like, right. No matter what a dude had done, I cannot conceive of a situation in which I would rationally evaluate the situation and get into a fight with somebody.
And conclude that there's no way this guy has a knife, a gun, or a whole bunch of friends.
Oh, no, I'm not, not even. Not, like, it has nothing to do with that. It is just it is against the law to punch someone, and then they could just probably sue you
right.
for everything that you own. And you're a dude that beat up a dude, so you can't be right in that situation.
That is what I argued at the guy who was poking me in the chest with his finger. It's like...
That you would sue him if he touched you again?
Well, no, I said, get your hand off of me, that's assault. Which, man. Yeah, was bullshit. I admit.
Playing lawyer ball. I cannot presume to understand what it feels like to have, you know... Yeah, it's like a guy almost runs you over, like, whatever. But if a guy almost runs over, like, your kid, like, I just have no idea, right? Like, that is a thing that I think I cannot... I am at present in my life incapable of understanding what that would be like.
I mean, imagine if... how mad you would be if someone, due to their carelessness, almost ran over your mom.
Yeah, okay.
And then it's a little more than that. So...
Yeah, even then, though, I mean, my mom is not helpless.
That's true. She puts up a decent fight.
Yeah. Fixer also went on to say, Miniskilly must be about the right age to enjoy Crimbo this year. I miss having little ones around to enjoy the holidays. I don't know, man. I don't know that I feel like there's going to be a real comprehension of... I feel like next year is going to be the sweet spot.
Yeah, like last year, he was almost a year old, and it was more... Ooh, somebody got me a cool box. Like, oh, okay, I ripped the thing off the box. Oh, there's a toy in here. Let's open it and play with it. Oh, I have to open another box, but I have the toy right here. And by the time we got to, like, four or five of those... He was just done, like, throwing a fit because he couldn't just sit and play with a toy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this year we'll just space them out throughout the day, you know? There's not going to be anybody here on Christmas Day.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I think this one is still for you guys. I think next year is going to be for him.
We're going to give him toys, which we do fairly frequently anyway, and he'll be excited for them like he is every time, and...
Like, after spending a week with your kid, like, I get that there is definitely a person in there, but I do not think that it is a person with anything approximating, like, a concrete understanding of the world.
Right. Or any part of it. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to be staying up late because he knows that Santa's on his way.
Yeah. he does know what color things are.
He knows the hell out of that, and he knows what letters look like.
Yeah. He has constructed some novel sentences of very varying complexity.
Ollie and Zach built a robot house.
Yeah, Ollie, Zach build robot house. Like, wow, that was like the last day. That was right before we left, and that was like the most complex thought I had heard him express. It was like he got noticeably better at understanding things over the course of a week. That was my impression, at least. And I feel like I also saw that when, like, we had a neighbor who had a kid who was about the same age that Ollie is now, who moved in, and, like, this year is just going to be, like, there is going to be such a massive gulf between what that kid's brain is capable of now and what it is capable of a year from now, that it is just kind of, it is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah. Ollie, the sentence structure got more complex while I was at Columbus. When I came back, he was articulating thoughts that he wouldn't have been able to when I left.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, to go from not being able to move to, like, walking around and feeding yourself in a year is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's gonna plateau, and that's gonna suck, and I'm gonna have to tell him, like, sorry, these major advances are pretty much behind you now.
But I think those major advances only happen when you are sort of definitionally incapable of really being aware of them.
Hmm.
Because I think it would freak you out, you know? I was listening to a radio lab, and it was talking about, like, some people... some experiments that were done that suggested that, like, the ability to think in any kind of a narrative way is sort of the same thing as having language. Like, not that you think in words after you learn words, but that you cannot think until you can speak. In terms of what we actually think of as meaning thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had done some stuff where there were some, you know, some people who were older but didn't have any language, or had only language, like, only, like, a... It was that weird situation where there was that group that sort of developed a sign language. Like, it was, like, a bunch of people who were deaf, but isolated and had developed their own kind of sign language to communicate.
Right.
But there were some, like, really weird, simple things that they were just cognitively totally incapable of until they were, you know, taught at, say, age 15 or whatever, a language. And then suddenly it just all clicked, and it's like, oh, okay, I get what that means now. You know, and I think it was things like being able to, like the concept of somebody else lying to you or something like that, you know? It was some weird empathy thing. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Hey, it's 10 past me having to pee 30. What do you think?
All right.
You want to take a little break?
Yep.
All right, we'll be back, and we're back. You know, yeah. Sometimes I do hear my voice, and I realize that I have been here and silent all of these years.
Yeah, I know. It's made for really awkward radio.
Yeah, and I appreciate you doing that amazing impression of me that you do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like the end of the documentary, which a lot of people haven't actually watched past the credits, but it's the camera pans down, and your microphone isn't plugged into anything.
Yeah, it's a beautiful testament to your fortitude and skill, I feel.
Yeah. We can keep going with this here radio thread. Billy Bob Fred said, intentional that you can't funk sling a reusable combat item with itself if you only have one. I mean, it's not so much intentional as when we made that rule about you not being able to funk sling an item if you only have one, there were no reusable combat items.
I mean, I had there been, though, I would have felt comfortable saying using the item takes the entire round of combat.
Yeah, but the idea is that you're using them at the same time.
Right.
One in each hand. Right, it's not like you're just doing it in sequence. It's ambidextrous funk slinging, not just, you know, making rounds of combat take longer so that you can do two complete actions.
Right, so we don't even need any tortured explanation at all, just the explanation of the skill.
Makes sense. That's already there in the name. Not Jim says, I second this question, any plans on karmic equipment in the near future after Exaggerate's question? And not in the near future, but something. And he says, also, I really hate to ask this, but isn't delay long overdue at this stage? You're well within your rights to... Like, I feel like people feel like they're being broken records, but, like, when I don't do something that I say in public that I'm going to do, it is absolutely okay to hassle me about it. I got so enthusiastic about the early game revamps that I was like, well, I'll just keep doing this, and this will naturally take care of delay. It's just that there is a lot more delay in later game stuff because there's a lot more complex quests in later game stuff and more places that it can be. So, like, you know, next thing is the knob, some tweaks to the knob. There is, I believe, at least one instance of delay in there, so you know, I'd kind of like to get to it naturally as opposed to, like, forcing it. You know, the crypt was the next thing I was going to do anyway, but I think now I'll just do that when I get to it.
Which quest is the crypt? Which level?
I don't actually remember.
It seems like it's not too long after the knob.
Yeah, it might be next. Because Friars is basically done already. I need to adapt it to the quest tracker. Mm-hmm.
I think it's been pretty well play tested at this point.
The new post one. Yeah, definitely. But I like the things that I would have done to it, to the pre-gate part of it. In this past are already done because that was revamped really recently. F of X says, I enjoyed the interview you guys did for Massively.com, those who haven't seen it, and he links to it in that thread. When you said that the PvP revamp was one of those areas of the game you really wanted to see done, was it in a, this is an area of the game I know is lacking, but I wish it had fixed itself sense, or are you actually going to focus on that in the future? I've tried PvP a bit recently, and it was more fun than I thought it would be. You know, it's one of a million things that sometimes I get excited about and some work gets done and then it's, you know, this ties into the third paragraph, which is an interesting question. He writes, also, have you ever thought about having a fixed development schedule? One of the things I like best in the game is the release of the new item of the month every month. I always get giddy about it a couple days before it comes out. People get really excited. People get really excited about Crimbo as well. If, instead of shoving content out the doors as you create it, you had a quarterly big release schedule, it might get people excited about March and September the way they get excited about December and June, which is already halfway there as a content familiar month. The thing about those is that, like, we get a tremendous amount of work done prior to the release of the June item of the month, and we get a lot of work done prior to Crimbo. And, you know, we get a lot of work done at the end of every month getting the item of the month ready. But those, I do not gain the same sense of sort of personal and creative satisfaction from those times as I do from something that comes out when it is ready. And so I know it is frustrating, and it is the kind of thing that if we had people whose job was to pay attention to Asymmetric as a business, they would yell at me about those things and make me unhappy. It's weird, you know. There is a lot to be said, I think, for that kind of constructive procrastination, where having a bunch of things going means you get more work done than if you had one looming thing that you could very explicitly ignore.
Right.
And having all of these things, having all of these things in the hopper that get released when they're done means that there is always going to be something that I am in the mood to do that will, at least at some point in the future, make the game better, as opposed to, well, we've decided that the PvP revamp is launching in March. This is the deadline. You know, where are we on these milestones? And every meeting we talk about it. And then if I'm not in the mood to work on PvP, I'm just not working on KOL. Because I think it is important that we are enthusiastic about the things that we work on in order for them to be any good.
Right, right.
Right? And the June stuff is always one-off enough that it's easy to get enthusiastic about it. Right? Like, it is not easy to get enthusiastic about finishing the C. And that's a thing where, like, I wish that the time would arrive where it's like, all right, sitting down and doing this until it's done, because it is so, so close. But it, like everything, has spiraled into just the next step and another giant thing, right? And so it's like, well, when will it actually be done? Like, it's... there is so much more stuff to do than there is time to do it. One of the things that's been going on this year is that we've been doing a tremendous amount of work and releasing a tremendous amount of content that people have liked, and I have spent the entire year feeling like I wasn't getting anything done. Because when I am working on things that are scheduled, for whatever reason, I just sort of don't count that as accomplishing anything. It's typically when we do that, like, Crimbo we don't use as an excuse to, like, do things that we've been meaning to do for years, right? The June item of the month, we don't do things that we've been meaning to do for years. It is the sort of unscheduled big things where it's like, oh, well, you know, Riff, all right, so just Riff's decided, like, all right, I'm just going to focus on the Nemesis stuff now, and then we do it, and then it's done. And, like, that's stuff that has been in the works for forever, and I guess, to a certain extent, I did just decide, all right, Riff, 3 months from now we're rolling the Nemesis. This is what you're working on now. And that always works out pretty well. And, you know, now he's working on the continuation of the Fernsworthy stuff and a bunch of work. Like, it is definitely in that phase where he is just chugging along doing a ton of work on it now. But yeah, I don't know. You know, we've got the post-gate revamp waiting for nothing but art. That's been sitting there for a month, and I know that's got to be frustrating to you. It's just, it never seems like the right moment to work on it from my end, and that just kind of sucks. You know, I think I probably could use some, the trouble with, like, I sort of at the top of the pyramid have to be pretty self-directed, and I have a hard time forcing myself to do things.
Right.
I want to get excited about a thing. You know, like, all of the like, sort of roadblocky arguments that happened that stalled progress on the PvP revamp the last time I did a bunch of serious effort on it, it's like, led me to a point where it's like, let's just go a slightly different direction with this. And then I sat down one day and did a whole bunch of work that all I have to do is hand it to CD Moyer, and there would be a working prototype within a couple of days, and I just haven't actually scanned it and given it to him yet. Which, maybe I should do that tomorrow, because I don't think we're going to need a whole lot out of him for Crimbo.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of new stuff. New mechanics, I guess.
Yeah, there won't need to be a lot of code written. There's not going to be an 11 this year. Well, there are. It's just going to be exactly the same as 11. We're actually just repeating. There's going to be a time rift, and Crimbo 2010 is just a repeat of Crimbo 2009. Mm. So, those of you who are paying attention to what happened with the lemonade stand.
Although I thought we were going to randomly redistribute the newspapers.
Oh, yeah. Shit, I forgot. How was Columbus, says Chill. Did you two have a good weekend? Fuck yeah, Columbus ruled.
It was pretty rad. I've discovered, finally codified the fact that if I want to have an entertaining evening and be, like, happy bouncing around and kind of drunk, that I should just drink hard alcohol without a mixer the entire night.
Yeah, you made it through a tremendous amount of tequila.
Yeah, I gave a lot of that away, but I drank a lot of it, too. It's just, I can drink half a bottle of tequila in a night, and that's an enjoyable night, but two or three beers will put me down.
Yeah. I was drinking a lot of Yingling, just because I could, because a lot of people came down from Pennsylvania. Yingling is okay.
It's a beer.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things like In-N-Out, where I could see how if I had this for a little while and then suddenly couldn't have it, I would be like, oh, that's really great, and I want it.
I think if you set it in a bucket with a bunch of other beers that are widely available that are in that price range, like, as I think it's in the, like, Amberbach and Killian's range for money, right?
Yeah,
it's not an expensive beer, but it's not the cheapest of the cheap. It's like if you put, like, a six-pack of Amberbach and a six-pack of Killian's and a six-pack of Heineken together with a six-pack of Yingling, I would reach for the Yingling every time.
I would probably alternate between the Yingling and the Amberbach because I like Amberbach quite a bit.
Yeah, I like
Amberbach. Killian's is one of those things like Rolling Rock where it's like, all right, if that's all they have.
Right. Currently, I'm drinking a Coors Light.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Dude, what the fuck?
I have a whole bunch of Coors Light at my house because for our Thanksgiving dinner, we're hosting a dinner for all of the aunts and uncles on my wife's side of my wife's mother's side of the family. Or
yeah, why did nobody show up to your stupid party?
Well, no, we were hosting Thanksgiving for this entire branch of the family, and it's like a couple with a kid, a grown kid, and her fiance, and grandpa and great uncle, and then the bulk of the people is husband and wife with five kids, two of whom are old enough to bring their significant others. So okay. There were nine people who took ill and didn't come. So instead of 15 people, we had six.
Huh.
And the people who didn't come, like last year I had bought a bunch of nice beer and they kind of brought their own crappy beer and drank it and ignored the nice beer. So it's like, okay, I'm going to get a 24-pack of Coors Light so that they can have it, and then I'm going to get some nice beer for myself. And so, you know, they came and went. The five people that were there didn't drink any of that Coors Light. So now, like, my first beer of the evening was the Delicious Grain Belt, but, you know, I'm making it my second beer.
Right. Yeah. I guess. I've never been able to bring myself... The after party of the first con that I owned this house... we had a party here. and there was a 30-pack of Budweiser and a 30-pack of Bud Light bought that are still in the downstairs fridge. And I have yet to ever get to the point where I would drink those. Well, you know what I'm having now, as my first beer of the night, is a Saison du Boeuf, which we had at the Neighborhood Bar in San Diego when we were there for Comic-Con this year. It's a joint effort between the Victory Brewery, the Stone Brewery, and the Dogfish Head Brewery. And boy, is it fucking great. If you, listeners, if you can find it, they've started bottling it recently, and I don't know if they're going to keep making it. It's pretty weird. It's kind of expensive, but it is the most sort of like novel beer experience I have encountered in the last 10 years. Like, this was equivalent to just like when you're first learning about beer and you keep finding new, like completely new kinds of beer that you didn't know existed. This is the most recent time that this has happened to me. It's a pale ale style made with parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Uh-huh. And it is a deeply interesting beer and fucking delicious. Chilled says, would you like to come back to the outskirts of the Knob eventually and draw some shiny new art on your underappreciated Knob? The Knob is the next thing up, and I kind of want to redraw those goblins because of the giant thick line weights. I know people are going to be like, I miss the old goblins, but... I don't know, man. I don't think I will make them worse in any way by making them look like the rest of the game. I am gonna redraw the interior of the Knob because I need to add some stuff to it, and I don't want it to look like it looks now. It more than anything is like in a super weird 2D 3D hybrid, and I think I'm just gonna switch it to like you know how in some of the old Dungeons and Dragons books you would see like a 2D version of a dungeon to show you like the elevations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked those. And I think that's kind of what I want to do. Just make it so that the stuff is actually sitting on the floor instead of the things opening into little rooms that have a kind of a floor
right.
drawn into them, and then shrunk down versions of regular game art clearly just cut and pasted into them without even fixing the edges. Three says, you know how there's some gnomish nomads wandering around the desert as part of the level 11 quest, and how there's some nomads wandering around the desert as part of the Moxie sign, and you know how you want to encourage people to take things other than muscle signs and also make the 11 quest less painful? Just wanted to seed some ideas without being too make a KOL-y. Number four, back in the day, my great-grandfather was a Batman. Sadly, this meant he was a butler to a very posh family rather than a vigilante superhero. Is that really a thing?
I don't know. And if you're a really light one, are you a bantam Batman?
Like a balsa? A balsa Batman?
And then like a bantam weight Batman.
Batman in Merriam-Webster is an orderly of a brillish military officer. Huh. So it's like a page.
Like a page out of history.
The definition of Batman kind of describes what's Batman's butler?
Alfred.
Alfred, yeah.
Alfred is Batman's Batman.
Shit, was this the day that Play Havoc is getting his guest spot?
No.
Oh, okay. Apparently. Have you talked about that? I got a PM from him suggesting that he believes maybe this is the day.
Yeah.
One of the things that we auctioned off at the Columbus Charity Auction was a 10-minute spot on the radio, and Shop Troll bought it and gifted it to Play Havoc.
Right. I'm going to say that will need to be next week, just because we didn't set it up.
Okay.
I told him the Monday after Columbus we didn't do a show, so...
Okay.
And I figured it would be cheating if I had done a solo show to have him on with just me. Yeah, because we all know who the draw is. Who is the draw?
No.
The draws.
You're the wind beneath my wings, Mr. Skullhead.
I am the, it's kind of cold here in your shadow, but that's alright. You know.
Yeah.
I'm used to the cold. I live in Minnesota.
Man, it is fucking cold here. What's that all about? I came back and it's like suddenly it's winter in the desert. The champion says, who came up with the Piano Cat's end of combat messages? Thanks to Ed in the wiki, the real song was stuck in my head all day today. Why, that was Mr. Skullhead that came up with the Piano Cat's end of combat messages.
Was indeed. I found it funny to think that this is the second time in my life that I've written a parody of Piano Man.
Yeah, but this is the first time you got paid for it.
Yeah, the first time I got paid for it. And the old one was, we did Stalag 17 as a play. My senior year. And there's a character who is the Geneva Man. So we wrote a whole set of lyrics about Stalag 17 to the tune of Piano Man, which was really popular at karaoke night. Say.
It was, I sang karaoke at Columbus.
You did, and I know somebody was videoing that, and it hasn't shown up.
Jesus Christ. I'm never doing anything ever again.
I so wanted to. People were taping that, I'm pretty sure.
We didn't do a good job, Mr. Skullhead. I didn't do a good job. You did a good job. I didn't do a good job.
We did a good enough job.
It was a humiliating defeat.
You walked the line between, like, taking it... You took it seriously enough that you were actually singing on key, but not seriously enough to not sing it in a funny voice. You know? I thought it was a triumph.
Huh.
I'm making a note here. Huge success.
Okay. Hey, your mom made a note. But the second word wasn't success.
It was ego for someone with such a tiny dick.
Oh, boy. Beowulf says, the KOL documentary was all well and good, but when is the Social Network-style film coming out? I, for one, want to see Raph Koster playing two of himself and asking Jick to create a game. And I want to see a Machiavellian ending where Scully is killed by his son under Jick's orders and Hot Stuff is arrested for snorting beer off of an underage beer girl. The last scene would feature Jick refreshing the Twitter feed, awaiting for the next update where Riff speaks about earwax vaginas. Also, don't forget the business card that read, I'm CEO, I guess. Shit. Also, he says, you've mentioned the mobile-friendly implementation of KOL would need to be separate from the full game, and that the Batman path would need to be an isolated run. Could you combine the two ideas to make mobile-created accounts perma-Batman as an enticement for creating a second normal account later? I don't know that I have said or that I believe that a mobile-friendly implementation of KOL has to be separate from the full game. I think what I believe is that if we are... half of the people who say we need a KOL iPhone game are saying it because they're like, I want to play KOL on my iPhone, and half of them are saying it because there's this huge untapped market and you guys could make $1 billion. Because you know what's better than $1 billion, Mr. Skullhead? $1 billion.
That's true.
And to the latter people, I would say, if we are going to do something on the iPhone that has, like, widespread appeal, something that people would play just on its merits, I think it is going to be something, it is going to need to be something that is less clumsy than a functional, playable version of KOL in its current form on the iPhone would have to be. Facebook has enough room that I don't think that that's true. I think that if I can get it to the point where I'm satisfied with all of the main quest progression, everything has the quest tracker in it, and the iconic top menu is, like, full-featured, I would be fine launching that as a Facebook game. What I don't want is for somebody who is like, oh, well, I played Mafia Wars, and I've heard that this was good, and then they look at this and think, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Which, I worry is what would happen, you know? I'm always gonna be worried about this shit, right? Like, I'm always gonna say, no one is ever going to like this game. Somehow we have just managed to trick people into thinking that what we've done is good enough that it's even worth their time, much less them having given us enough money to have made a living off of it for the last few years. So I can't be trusted with my opinions about these things. But, yeah.
The KOL Facebook page is going well, I think.
Is it?
I
see your updates and they're funny.
We're up to, thank you. We're up to, what, 850 followers now?
And that's without ever telling anyone about it, so.
Right. Say, posting it on the front page.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, we have a number of things to talk about at tomorrow's, well, at Wednesday's meeting. Fuck. I wish tomorrow was Wednesday.
I think you we know should
what I
have...
wish? What I wish is that there was another week or two of November left.
Yeah. I think that we should have our conference call tomorrow so that we can have some tête-à-tête and get things set up that we can work on for the rest of the day to roll out.
Yeah, it will have to be a little later than usual. Hot Stuff gets back into town at like 1 and I'll be at the airport. This is totally interesting to the listeners. I'll be getting him from the airport and then like immediately buckling down to work on stuff. Like that's the plan. So we can do that at that point and figure out what everybody's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One or the other of the things that I want to do by the first is probably going to have to be put off by a day or two. And I think it's okay if one of those is the item of the month, right?
Yeah.
Because we need to figure out what we're going to do with all that. Let's see. Lightning just says, what do you think about the idea of giving people who choose not to perm a skill an extra karma? Just throw it into Hanks on ascending or something. Wouldn't be that big of a deal, but would give people who have all the skill permed a bit of initiative to continue to ascend instead of just waiting for the DB trader skill. I don't know, man. That seems a little weird. Because what I don't want is that to be an option. And for somebody to think, like... So... There are those guys in The Legend of Zelda that give you the choice between a potion or a heart container. And I think that is bad game design giving people that choice, right? I get that there is a set of circumstances under which you might want a karma if you don't have any skills to perm. But giving somebody the option to do that, giving somebody the option to sort of throw away the most important reward that the game ever gives you is going to lead them to believe that we feel like that's a thing you might do, and I don't feel like that is a thing that you might do. So I think you need to be careful. When I was a kid playing Legend of Zelda, took the fucking potion, and then afterwards I'm like, why the fuck did I do that? Like... That is seriously when I look back on my life and think about the things that I regret, being dumb enough to take that potion instead of that heart container is like, it's one of those failures that haunts me. And that's fucking weird. That is weird. Why is that a thing? What is wrong with me?
Well, that makes sense then why you wouldn't want to do what they were talking about here.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, that's... I don't want kids growing up regretting, why didn't I perm Pasta Mastery? Why did I take that karma? Why did I take a consumable instead of a permanent gain?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember evaluating the options and saying, well, with my playstyle, which is to say that I keep having to get these potions because I'm terrible at the boss fights, this basically, in one of the fixed number of times that I'm going to need... that many hearts. This gives me twice as many hearts instead of one additional heart. But, you know, still stupid. But to a certain extent, I blame them for presenting me with that choice.
And we're not going to go down that road.
No.
That's a road down which we shall not go.
Big Mara says, you've now stated that Hobopolis was intentionally left open in terms of ascension relevance. Do you view the use of Hobopolis boss consumables as a problem, given the magnitude of turn generation it enables? It seems to me that somebody made the decision when Hobopolis was open that marketplace food and booze should not be available when in Hardcore or Ronin, or at least that's how I understand it. Why are the boss food and booze drops different? Thanks for humoring me. Well, the way that we made them not ascension relevant was to put a level 13 requirement on them, right? And... I think that if anything changes as a result of all this hullabaloo, it is going to be that those will get a level 15 requirement. Because I think that accomplishes our goals. It does it using a slightly more, you know, a slightly less nuanced touch than I would prefer. Because why can't a level 14 guy eat those things, right? I mean, I feel like it is not inconceivable that you could be level 13 post-Prism, be active in Hobopolis, and want to eat that food, right? putting Ronin restrictions on them is a little weird. The ones in the marketplace were just too easy to get, right? You could do it with basically no commitment at all. I don't know. I mean, the jury's still out on whether that's a thing that needs anything done about it or not, you know, and I have basically just stepped away from everything for the last 2 weeks. So I've been reading the forums, haven't been working, haven't been doing anything except traveling around and having a good old time. And I'm sure that when I'm in the midst of some work that's really satisfying to me, I'll read some forum threads about Hobopolis consumables and Ascension and get depressed. But FBOTM says, y'all get your Max FunCon tickets yet? Hell yeah, I got our Max FunCon tickets. I got one for Scully because I'm totally fucking making that happen.
Nice.
We need to figure it out though, because we just gotta like kind of fly by night, get you out here, and then drive over and do it.
Where is this place?
It is like, it is about 4 hours west of here by car.
So somewhere in inland California.
Yeah, it's like at Lake Arrowhead, California. It's like a kind of a little resort town. Where some university owns a little like lakeside resort thing that gets rented out for this convention, and just a lot of drinking, a lot of eating, a lot of hanging out with unannounced at this point sort of minor nerd celebrities. Hodgman is always there, and you can always just go say hi to him, and he'll just sit and talk to you and drink a beer. Like it's just that kind of thing.
Where Hodgman would actually break character and just talk like a dude?
Oh, I am more or less convinced that he is his character.
Well, the whole, like, making up facts about things...
Sure.
Can't possibly be an inherent character trait, because he talks about how he created that character.
Yeah, sure, yeah. No, as I understood, I didn't actually talk to him while I was there last year, but he definitely, like, looking at him talking to people, he was definitely just acting like a normal person would act. Just in terms of body language and stuff. But, you know, just shooting the shit with the Mystery Science Theater guys. I hope they're back. You'll have to start smoking cigars long enough to go pester them.
Yeah. I'll hope not to embarrass myself.
Yeah.
I fanboyed
out a little bit, but I reined it in pretty quick.
When I got something signed at Comic-Con, I handed Mike Nelson one of my business cards, and I said, this is the game that I make for a living, and a lot of it is influenced by all of the Mystery Science Theater that I watched. And he just kind of looked up and smiled glassily and signed the thing and handed it to me, like, oh, I'm sorry,
I think I caught him, I had the same conversation with him, but caught him at a time when he had not been dealing with a line of people talking about how influential he had been.
Yeah, it was clearly, this was a time when he was kind of mechanically signing things, not the, like, take 30 seconds and tell me how important I was to your upbringing. It also feels weird telling
to us at con and talking to us while we're signing the certificates at con.
Yeah. And I suppose it is weird, like, it's weird for me to have somebody tell me they grew up playing Kingdom of Loathing, so, to have a 30-year-old guy like, dude, when I was a kid, I loved Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, exactly. And I was talking about, one of the things that I asked when we went to the, like, panel thing that they did, and because this was, like, relevant to me, I was like, how do you balance, especially, like, as you get older, how do you balance, like, working on stuff versus consuming enough culture that you can continue to make relevant jokes about stuff, right?
Right.
Because it's like starting to get to the point where it's like, well, one of these years it is going to creep up on me that I have no fucking idea what music the kids are listening to these days.
Right.
Right. And I won't have seen any movies that came out in the last year or whatever. And his answer was super depressing because it was like, oh, we just, like, hired some younger guys at the office to, like, be aware of stuff for us.
Wow.
He was mostly joking, but it was also a thing. Like, it was just, that was basically how they stayed on top of the, like, internet stuff, right? That they weren't, like, acutely aware of. And, So yeah, it was, I'm curious. Moxious Mouse wrote, broken vending machine in the Dungeoneers Association, just for fun or unimplemented content? Sort of undesigned content at this point. I know vaguely how the Dungeoneers Association is going to work. There'll eventually be a receptionist. I could have also put an unattended desk in there. I want a receptionist, but I want it to be a guy. What do you call a male receptionist?
A receptionist.
Really?
Or a fag.
Oh!
I don't think receptionist is a title like dominatrix.
You know?
Or waitress. Yeah, I think it's a gender-neutral title.
What do you call a... See, I think of a barista as always being female.
Yeah, because the males are baristos. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. A person who makes and serves coffee as espresso to the public. The dictionary failed to load its style sheet when that happened. That was weird.
I know
Hey, look, it's past 8.
All right. It's about time for us to get
that
off
flew this by.
Video.
I had fun. I hope this was at least marginally listenable.
That was a good show. I think it was a good show. If you don't think it was a good show, I'm sorry. And you should download the AON podcast, episode 4. Because that was
Is that
a good
how
show.
You find it? The AON podcast?
It's just... yeah, because no one can spell apropos of nothing except us. Yeah, AONpodcast.com.
Atropos or nothing.
A prop OS.
Apophis or the Guauld symbiote.
Exactly. All right. We'll say goodnight, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Goodnight, everybody. We'll see you.